Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Friday, February 17th. Today, it's time for our monthly deep dive into Colorado's rich musical tradition with Sun writer Kevin Simpson and longtime music reporter G. Brown, whose Colorado Music Experience website, colomusic.org, maintains a comprehensive collection of information, videos, and recordings of live Colorado shows spanning decades. Before we begin, join ACG Denver's Rocky Mountain Corporate Growth Conference on March 20th to 21st as the middle market business community comes together to discuss trending issues and the latest investment strategies. Make new connections and partner with experts at Hyatt Regency Denver for 2 days of networking and learning opportunities that will help prepare you for 2023 and beyond. Register at acg.org/denver. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. A band of fortune seekers, organized by farmer and prospector William Russell, departed from their homes in northern Georgia on this day in 1858 on an excursion to the eastern slope of the Rocky Mountains. The result of their trek was the Pikes Peak Gold Rush. The Panic of 1857 had weakened the nation's economy and inspired Americans to find new ways to survive. The notion of money for the taking proved appealing. A small party of men, experienced in prospecting from the rushes in Georgia and California, set out early the next year. The group included Russell's two brothers and their neighbor Lewis Ralston, who on his way to California in 1850 had panned a few flakes in modern Jefferson County, Colorado's first recorded gold discovery. Russell's party paused in what is now Oklahoma, where several Cherokees related to the Georgians joined their trek. By the time they reached western Kansas Territory, the group had swelled to more than 100 men filled with hope. Prospectors found scant color in Cherry, Clear, Fountain, and Ralston Creeks, and the Arkansas and South Platte Rivers, and most of the party returned home. Russell and his brothers remained, along with 10 others, not including the disillusioned Ralston. In early July, the remaining prospectors focused on the South Platte in modern Denver and Arapahoe counties. They made their major strike where Dartmouth Avenue crosses the river at its junction with Little Dry Creek. Russell and his companions panned several hundred dollars worth of gold there. Word spread, and the rush was on, inspired by a band of prospectors searching for salvation in the creek beds of modern Colorado. Before we continue, a quick message. It's polar plunge time. Gather your team, choose your costumes, and make the leap together into ice-cold water while supporting the athletes of Special Olympics Colorado. With plunges located throughout the state, there is one close to you. It's time to choose your chill. Visit specialolympicsco.org/plunge and sign up today. Next, our feature story.
It's Friday again, Colorado, and this week, that means it's time once again to welcome in our good friend G. Brown to talk music with a distinct Colorado flavor. And we've got some fascinating stuff to get to today. Hey, G, how are things up at the Brown Palace?
Well, Kevin, as usual, everything's fine as long as I don't turn on the TV or look out the window, but I'm okay.
Cool. Well, you know, sadly, gee, it seems that no sooner do we mourn the passing of one of pop or rock's great talents than another one leaves us. Last month, we recorded our podcast talking about some all-time greats like Jeff Beck, who recently died and left an amazing guitar legacy. And no sooner had we recorded that segment than David Crosby died. And of course, he had a hand in a number of important musical influences right up to the end.
Well, sure. Cros was the rare two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee as an original member of the Byrds and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. But a lifer, for sure, made music up to the end. He was such a formative influence in recent years for a whole generation of younger musicians. The guy was one of the great harmony singers of all time, doing that weird stuff in the middle, right? Yeah, the high part and the low part, but those weird jazz chords and melodies in the middle. He was really something that way.
Do you have a favorite of his works?
You know, as far as that goes, I've been paying attention to his biggest pop hit as a solo artist, a song called Hero that was co-written and produced by Phil Collins, who everyone has their own opinion on. He was kind of ubiquitous on the radio for a time with that furry little voice of his and playing with Genesis and his solo recordings. But they collaborated on Hero, and it's just really a remarkable bit of record making. And, you know, both of them, they had, you never heard another musician diss them as far as musical talent, right? Collins was a metronome and as a drummer, incredible singer. But because he was on the pop side of the equation, he kind of got dissed by hardcore rock and rollers, and I'm not sure that was fair. Anyway, that collaboration with Crosby, I've been paying attention to lately. There's some incredible singing and harmonic elements to it that usually don't make the top 40. He once told me that the first time he ever smoked pot was on University Hill in Boulder. He said it was in 1900 and freezing to death. He was a teenager. He just left California and was crashing with some friends and playing guitar in a little coffee shop called The Attic, which, of course, was in the basement of the building. He later modified his story. He might have tried cannabis a time or two before that. But Cross had an interesting relationship with marijuana. I mean, in his case, you could say that it was indeed a gateway drug. But when he was out of rehab in the late 80s, I spoke with him on the Crosby, Stills, and Nash tour bus when they performed at Fiddler's Green. And he gave me a clinic on cannabis. He had the knowledge base of a botanist, an agriculturist, a chemist. He knew it chapter and verse. And then he said, but I can't touch it. I love everything about it, but I can't go near it. I have an addictive personality. And then years after that, when he'd been clean for a while, he embraced it wholeheartedly once again. I think in recent years, his advocacy even entailed pushing his own strain, the Mighty Cross.
Oh, wow. I know you got a chance to talk with him just a few years ago on your own podcast, which I want to remind listeners is available in its entirety on colomusic.org and is just a must listen if you're a fan at all. And you talked about his music, of course, but David Crosby was just about equally famous for what he did outside of music. And in the podcast, he really didn't shy away from any of that in a very candid conversation with you.
Yeah. Cross, here's a guy who wrote two autobiographies, right? And the output was justified. I mean, everything from his addiction to his liver transplant to being the sperm donor for Melissa Etheridge's kids to discovering and reuniting with his adult son and musician late in life. And he was always outspoken about his beliefs on any topic and also the duality of his personality. Cross could charm the paper right off the wall, or he could be incredibly disruptive, shall we say. He burned a lot of bridges, but I was privy to both sides of his personality. I'm grateful for that, and thankfully much more of the former. I think it was in evidence on the podcast.
And that podcast from 2019, it was such a great conversation with just a fascinating guy. Can we play a clip from it?
I don't know. Can we, Kev?
Let's give it a try.
You know that little triangular block up on the hill? It's a massage parlor or something now. But underneath it, there was a grubby little basement. And there was a coffee house there called The Attic, because it was in the basement. Hippies. And I worked there for a winter. Very educational.
Freezing your ass off?
Definitely freezing your ass off. Okay. I had a war surplus overcoat, and I think I had a sweater on top of my t-shirt. That was it. It was grim. It was grim, but there were girls. And that sort of made it up for everything.
Is it true that that is where you smoked your first joint?
No. But when I was able to get it here, there was a really nice Japanese girl who had some, and I smoked it all up. 8 miles high, and
when you touch down, you'll find... All right. Well, I want to turn our attention now to a Denver-bred musician who made it big after honing his skills at Denver East High School. And while for a lot of you, Philip Bailey of Earth, Wind, and Fire certainly fits that description, so does a gentleman named Kenny Passerelli. You may not remember him as a solo act, but gosh, he recorded with a who's who of rock royalty.
Kenny has his own Colorado Music Experience podcast that's quite informative, if I say so myself. Kenny grew up in Denver and attended East, as you allude to. He received formal musical training and had an amazing career. He had the chance to audition for Stephen Stills in the early 70s and got that gig, but he wound up hooking up with Joe Walsh and recorded the first albums made up at the legendary Caribou Ranch outside of Nederland. He got a co-writing credit on Rocky Mountain Way, which you know is our unofficial state anthem.
Absolutely.
Life of Illusion, that's his mariachi horn part on that record. And he played bass and toured with Elton John, Hall & Oates, Dan Fogelberg. It's arguably the greatest musical career from homegrown talent.
Wow. And while his days as a rock star are well behind him now, it sounds like just recently he's found a new outlet for his songwriting talent.
Yeah, Kenny is hooked up with Amy Loper, who's a retired trial lawyer. She's rediscovered her singing voice, and they've created a collaboration in life and in song. They're going to perform an original show called Forever and Now at Dazzle on March 2nd. And I'll be there to check it out.
Fantastic. Well, let's play a clip from Kenny Passerelli's catalog. What's it going to be?
I think we should do Life of Illusion. I'm a sucker for mariachi horns.
All right, let's do it. Okay, I want to talk about an event coming up March 4th that just sounds like a blast. I'm not normally a big fan of panel discussions, but a group of CU Boulder faculty will be holding a panel discussion on, quote, music of the long 70s, black power, punk, jam bands, and Jewish soul. That's quite an inviting title there. And they'll be counting on your Colorado Music Connection for some of its great content. And I'm guessing profiles, video, and more that'll be linked on the lecture's website. Now, you and I both came of age in the 70s, so this is kind of in our wheelhouse. But what are we talking about specifically? And do any or most of these folks have any strong Colorado connections?
Well, the professors will be talking about all sorts of musicians under the aforementioned categories, the Jewish soul thing. I'm as anxious as you are to see what that entails. But some of the musicians, ranging from Aretha Franklin to Carole King, have Colorado connections, and I'm honored to collaborate with the CU Outreach Program and provide some content that way. For Aretha, it was a show at Red Rocks in 1968 that didn't happen. She refused to perform when the promoter couldn't pay her, and a riot ensued. And Carole King lived in Colorado for a spell in the 70s, a few years after her amazing success with the Tapestry album, and she was looking for a backing band and recruited an excellent Boulder-based group called Navarro to go on tour with her and record her Simple Things album.
Wow, that's a lot of ground these guys have to cover in their panel discussion. Do we have a clip from one of these folks you mentioned?
Now let's play something from Carole King's Simple Things album. This was the single.
Like horses running free.
Well, finally, G, I thought we could close out the podcast with a little tribute to Burt Bacharach, who, again, passed away recently, just another one that we've lost. And he contributed just a tremendous body of work over the course of his career with some really notable collaborations. His last concert appearance in Colorado was quite some time ago, but what do you remember about him? What will you remember about him?
Well, I was honored to talk about the whole arc of his career during that 2000 show. And you can see the fruits of that. I entailed it in a remembrance that's on the Colorado Music Experience website. Hardcore rock and rollers always dismissed Burt because he messed with orchestras and had kind of a whiff of easy listening about his music. And that's as insulting and inaccurate as any stereotype in my mind. He had a gift for melody that, to my mind, was unrivaled. I mean, next time, instead of singing along, just listen and hear where he takes songs like Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head or any of his collaborations with Dionne Warwick or even Tom Jones' What's New Pussycat. I mean, just the way those things took off in directions that I don't think any composer would even consider. It's the definition of genius in my book.
Well, I remember a medley of his tunes by Dionne Warwick was a staple of my playlist on whatever generation of music player happened to be in vogue at the time. But I'd like to play us off today with a clip from one of Bacharach's less celebrated works. In fact, this one caught quite a bit of criticism. But that, to me, is just kind of a masterpiece, and that's a hill I'll die on. He wrote the soundtrack for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which remains one of my all-time favorite films. And while Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head was the big hit off that album, we're going to leave you with a bit of something called South American Getaway, which features some memorable scat singing harmonies, which several of the tracks do from that soundtrack. So thanks for joining us again this month, G.
Thank you, Kevin. Always a pleasure.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. All five of Colorado's Democratic U.S. representatives are criticizing a decision by Mercy Hospital in Durango to stop allowing women to get their tubes tied. They issued a joint statement Thursday urging the Catholic hospital to reconsider its policy barring tubal ligation. The reaction comes after a recent story in the Colorado Sun about the Catholic hospital's re-education of doctors and staff about Catholic directives that prohibit sterilization for the purpose of birth control. The statement is signed by U.S. Representatives Diane DeGette, Yadira Carveo, Jason Crow, Joe Neguse, and Brittany Pedersen. A bill introduced at the Colorado Capitol this week would let cities allow overdose prevention centers, where people would be allowed to openly use illicit drugs under the supervision of healthcare workers or other trained staff. House Bill 1202 is part of a years-long debate around the so-called safe use or supervised injection sites. The measure was brought by four Democrats who said it could reduce preventable overdoses. A similar push to allow safe injection sites in Colorado failed in 2019 amid blowback from Republicans, who said the centers encourage illegal drug use. A federal lawsuit filed this week alleges Denver International Airport leaders retaliated against a director there after he raised concerns that he and other people of color working in the airport's parking and transportation department were paid less than their white peers with similar responsibilities. Defendants in the lawsuit brought by former DIA worker Benjamin Juarez include Denver Mayor Michael Hancock, Airport CEO Philip Washington, and Juarez's former supervisor. The lawsuit said airport officials made working conditions intolerable for Juarez after he complained about unequal pay. Officials declined to comment. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. Before we go, we encourage you to check out a new podcast from our friends at KUNC called The Colorado Dream. Here's a sneak peek.
The new season of The Colorado Dream explores the Black immigrant experience in Aurora. It's told through the eyes of one African woman.
I would sit on the beach and just daydream about coming to America.
And the city of Aurora that's working to become an inclusive home for all.
In the last 20 years, we have a new face of the city.
I'm Stephanie Daniel. Join me for The Colorado Dream, Newcomers Welcome. You can find the series at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of The Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.